When I thus expressed my heartfelt desire into the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the lotus-eyed Lord instructed me about his transcendental situation. Purport. The words Paramamstitim are significant in this verse. The Lord's transcendental situation was not even spoken of to Brahma when the fourth verse of Srimad Bhagavatam 2933 to 2936 were explained. This transcendental situation comprises his dealings with devotees engaged in transcendental loving service, as exhibited at Dvarka and Vrindavan. When the Lord explained his specific transcendental situation, it was meant for Uddhava only, and therefore Uddhava particularly said, Mahyam, unto me, although the great sage Maitreya was also sitting there. Such a transcendental situation is hardly understood by those whose devotion is mixed with speculative knowledge or fruitive activities. The Lord's activities is confidential love. The Lord's activities in confidential love are very rarely disclosed to the general devotees who are attracted by devotion mixed with knowledge and mysticism. Such activities are the unconceivable pastimes of the Lord. When I thus expressed my heartfelt desire into the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the lotus-eyed Lord instructed me about his transcendental situation. So in few verses earlier, we were hearing of Uddhava, who was becoming bewildered. He was remembering how Lord Krishna will sometimes come to him and ask him for advice, like if Krishna was bewildered and needed the help of Krishna. And then he was thinking, how can we understand those contradictions that are in the Lord? That in one sense the Lord knows everything, and in the other sense he is coming to ask for advice. How can we understand the Lord? And yesterday we heard about Uddhava asking for this transcendental knowledge that you were mentioning. And today's verse, Uddhava is telling Vidura that when I express my desire to the Supreme Lord to understand his person, to understand him truly, then the Lord instructed me about his transcendental situation. But then, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentioned that Uddhava mentioned this transcendental situation of the Lord was explained only to Uddhava, or actually to devotees who are pure devotees. And Srila Prabhupada explained that even Brahma, who received the knowledge of the Chatushlokas, the four main verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, actually did not get this knowledge, even Brahma. But actually, this knowledge is given to very special devotees, and these are the devotees who are pure, who have a pure bhakti. So what is this transcendental situation of the Lord that Uddhava is asking for? Prabhupada writes in the purport, his transcendental situation comprises his dealings with devotees engaged in loving service. So this transcendental situation of the Lord is actually his relationship with his pure devotees. And then Prabhupada said, those topics are hardly understood if our devotion is mixed, if the devotees do not have this pure bhakti toward the Lord. And what does it mean to have a mixed bhakti? That's mixed with what? How can our devotion can be mixed? Yeah, karma and jnana, very, very easily. So what does it mean that our devotion is mixed with karma?
Maybe that we have impure motives, or
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what does it mean to have our bhakti mixed with jnana? Mani Manjari? Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone? Anything else about? Yeah. And actually, when it is mixed with jnana, there is a desire for liberation. That's karma. That's desire for sense enjoyment, mixed with jnana is desire for liberation. And we can see very often this jnana. Mishra Bhakti can come in us, like I want peace, I want freedom from anxiety, from difficulties. That's very very often I can see, at least in myself, how Bhakti become mixed with this jnana, with this desire for liberation. I'm suffering so much in the world, then I want mukti, I want liberation. This is Bhakti mixed with jnana. And mixed with karma is, okay, I do my service, I do my devotional service, but I want this, I want that, I want comfort, I want peace also, I want not to have to do much or to do in that way or that way. I want my own arrangement according to my own desire. I do some bhakti, but I want everything to go according to my own desire. So this is mixed with karma. I'm sorry? Yeah, that's another. That's now what we hear is what is actually the ultimate. What is actually where we need to go? If we pure bhakti is the place we need to go, and if we don't hear or don't meditate on that place where we need to go, we have really almost no chance to reach it there. So it's now what I say is obviously far away from us, but we need to know where we want to go. What is the goal of our practice? Where we want to reach? But if we don't hear about that, then we remain Kanishta Adhikari our whole life. We remain mixed Bhaktas our whole life, and actually we will not be able to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it is said He's revealing to those who have this pure bhakti in their hearts. So, yeah, but we'll hear more. There is actually, I found very, very nice quotes yesterday in my research work. I found a quote from Jaiva Dharma, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I don't remember, one guru is instructing his disciple, I don't remember the name of the persons in this particular moment of Jaiva Dharma, but the guru is telling the disciple, this Shuddha Bhakti, this bhakti which is totally pure, is our sadhana. So we hear that Shuddha Bhakti is the goal. But in that sense, very interesting, he said, this Shuddha Bhakti is our sadhana, is our practice. And in the perfect stage, Shuddha Bhakti is transformed into prema. The two paths described as karma and jnana are simply related to bhakti and mukti, respectively. So desire, bhakti for bhoga, enjoyment, and mukti for liberation. They do not constitute the means to guide the jiva to the highest eternal perfection, prema bhakti. That means as long as the bhakti is mixed with this jnana and karma, we just cannot reach a higher level, a higher transcendental level of understanding. I was not so sure about this bhakti mixed with jnana. What does it really mean? So I was looking what jnana means. And jnana means empiric knowledge. Any one of you know what empiric knowledge means? Very good. I was thinking, my God, after so many years in Krishna consciousness, I still don't know what it means. But thank you, Mani Manchari. I also found this. There is another quote in Srimad Bhagavatam 3.29.9 where Srila Prabhupada explained. I mean, that's the same point, but it's good to hear it many times from different, with different words and different perspectives, so that it actually makes a deeper imprint in us. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, when one has even a tinge of personal interest, his devotion is mixed with the three modes of material nature. So we hear about mixed with karma and with jnana, and here Prabhupada mentioned that our bhakti can be mixed also with the modes of material nature. And really amazing purport Prabhupada write. I have few sentences I would like to read. Really beautiful. The verse itself said that the worship of deities in the temple by a separatist with a motive from material enjoyment, fame and opulence is devotion in the mode of passion. So the purport. A separatist is one who sees his interest as separated from that of the Supreme Lord. This is one, what means to be a separatist. That means to see one's own interest separately than the interest of the Lord. Mixed devotees, or devotees in the mode of passion and ignorance, think that the interest of the Supreme Lord is supplying the orders of the devotees. The interest of such a devotee is to draw from the Lord as much as possible for their senses. That's very, very interesting how Prabhupada writes. That's the mixed devotee. They think the interest of the Supreme Lord is to supply my order, to supply whatever I like, whatever I want. This is the business of the Lord. This is the separatist mentality. Actually, pure devotion is explained in the previous chapter. The mind of the Supreme Lord and the mind of the devotee should be dovetailed. What does it mean, dovetailed? Yeah, link together like one, like they become one, dovetailed. I hope my understanding of the English is proper. And it's written even a little more. A devotee should not wish anything but to execute the desire of the Supreme. That is oneness. When the devotee has an interest or will different from the interest of the Lord, his mentality is that of a separatist. When the so-called devotee desires material enjoyment without reference to the interest of the Supreme Lord, or he wants to become famous or opulent by utilizing the money or grace of the Supreme Lord, he is the mode of passion. I found very, very beautiful those words of Prabhupada, and I will a little bit mention later how. Jiva Goswami in Bhaktisandarbha mentioned that pure bhakti is when we are free from material desire. One should feel happy only by executing the happy, by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This is actually when we are in the pure level of bhakti. We just want to enjoy the pleasure of the Lord. We just want to enjoy the association with the Lord and to enjoy the Lord being happy. And this is so beautiful how Prabhupada writes that in the pure level, the devotee's desire had become one with the desire of the Lord. That's actually the oneness. But when our desires are separated, or even how Prabhupada writes so beautiful, this desire of the mixed devotee who think the Lord should now supply whatever I need. Yeah. So pure bhakti takes place after the Brahma-Buddha stage, which is actually the liberated stage, which is actually quite a high platform. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, the 4.30.20, we hear about what is this Brahma-Buddha stage or this liberated stage. And this is very encouraging. This is very giving us like desire to reach that stage as soon as possible. Always engaging in the activities of devotional service, devotees feel ever increasingly fresh and new in their activities. The all-knower, the super soul within the heart of the devotee, makes everything increasingly fresh. This is known as the Brahman position. In such a liberated stage, Brahma-Buddha, one is never bewildered, nor does one lament or become unnecessarily jubilant. This is due to the Brahma-Buddha situation. So at this Brahma-Buddha platform, all the activities of devotional service, the devotees become increasingly fresh and new in their activities. That means there is no way to become bored. It's always ever fresh, always. And this point of ever increasing, this is the very attractive. This ever increasing freshness into the service. That means ever increase of enthusiasm, an ever increase of desire to serve and to please the Lord. This is actually, as more as we are progressing, as more we come close to that point, as more it goes fast. Like one devotee was giving the example of a magnet and the metal. When they are far away, there is almost no attraction. But when they come close, as more they come close, as fast the attraction comes and as fast the two join. So also, as we are progressing in spiritual life, it will become actually faster and faster that this feeling of ever freshness or this feeling of ever increasing happiness in serving the Lord will actually rise and gradually come more and more. Srila Jiva Goswami in this connection says that the super soul, the planetary expansion of the personality of Godhead, exists in everyone's heart. But in the heart of the devotees, he reveals himself as ever increasingly new. Being inspired by him, the devotee experienced increased transcendental bliss in the execution of his devotional service. So it's almost the same point that Jiva Goswami mentioned. Jiva Goswami explained that the Paramatma, or the super soul, is in the heart of everyone, but in the heart of the devotees, the Paramatma, or the super soul, is actually revealing himself as ever increasingly new. Beautiful. And being inspired by him, by the super soul, the devotee experiences increased transcendental bliss in the execution of his devotional service. So what is the devotional service? What is practically this devotional service we are rendering?
From Ramakrishna Goswami, and he mentioned that chant Hare Krishna, he felt that inspired by the super soul, this chanting becomes more and more fresh, more and more tasty.
But you did not answer my question. How in a practical way devotion is displayed or performed? Yeah? Okay, I'm waiting for something else.
I think it's exchange of love.
Okay.
Exchange of love.
First. Leo. How do we perform bhakti? Okay. Good. Basically, it's Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnusmaranam, Padasevanam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, and maybe I'm losing one of them. It's actually, those are actually what is really called like the process of devotional service. And obviously, when it's done with love, with the heart, with this desire to please Krishna, then it's really like bhakti. So, the point I want to make is, I spoke actually, because you arrive a little now, I spoke a little about pure bhakti and mixed bhakti with jnana and karma, or the pure bhakti. And we see there are many spiritual movements who are actually very much focusing on this pure bhakti. Like I think the group of Narayan Maharaj, if you look on internet, their webpage is called Pure Bhakti. And there is one sadhu in Vashana, Ramesh Baba, who is very, very, very much stressing this point, that we perform devotional service truly for the pleasure of Krishna. And we actually don't try to perform devotional service to become to become famous or to become to have a position, even into an institution. And I was staying in his ashram for few weeks, and I sometimes took notes from his lecture, and I just found yesterday something that he was writing that I found it maybe good just to read about this importance to check how we are behaving, to check what our motivations are, so that we can actually come to this point of pure bhakti, that we don't stay our whole life in a bhakti mixed with this material desire and mixed with desire of liberation. And again, this point on Jaiva Dharma, where the spiritual master tells his disciple, this Shuddha Bhakti is our sadhana. This Shuddha Bhakti is our practice. This is what we should practice, to come to this level we serve Krishna without other motivations. Here is the quote. The mind should not wander in worldly thought. We think that we are devotees, but we are not. We must catch our bad habits and throw them away. We must ask ourselves, what kind of person I am? Everybody knows what his bad habits are. When we catch our lusty glance going to the opposite sex, when we become angry, we should know we are not devotees. We are devotees of Maya. So that's very, very important, that when we have those mixed feeling in our mind, when we are attracted by Maya, we should understand it's not proper. It's not good. I have to change that. I cannot just keep those things going on. I need to come to this pure bhakti. When we want good food and material comfort, we must know that we are not devoted to Krishna, but to our senses. One who has Ekantika Bhakti will get the grace of Krishna. The Lord will welcome one who gives up his worldly opulences. Like a woman will become attracted by the good quality of a man, Krishna will become attracted by our good qualities. So I found this very, very important point to look on our motives, how we are performing devotional service, and to learn to throw away this tendency for karma, this tendency for material enjoyment, for everything to go the way we want, and this tendency for liberation, for getting a freedom of sufferings. Sometimes we can get this bad habit. We are performing devotional service, and by the performance of this devotional service, there is actually a lot of power that is given to us. And sometimes it is even said that devotees get siddhis. They get mystic powers. Obviously, they don't want to use them for other way than to serve the Lord. But a lot of power is generated by the practice of devotional service. And how will we be able to use this power back into the service to Krishna and not try to take it for ourselves? And there is one thing I remember, maybe I told it already sometimes in my lectures. We had a Kriya Pravesh ceremony in the Dharma Castle, like a yagya to open the place. And Pumash was engaged into the yagya, and he asked me to lead the bhajan. So during the whole evening, actually, I think I was leading the bhajans. And when we drove back to the ashram that evening, Pumash told me, "Oh, you sang very nicely this evening, Gaurahari." And I mean, usually Pumash would not praise me so often. So I felt very happy he was praising me now. So I said, "Thank you, Guru Maharaj." Then he said, "But I think you should start to sing for Krishna and not for yourself." And that was actually it was like waking me up. And then I just observed how I was singing at that evening. And then I just observed what was in my mind was, hopefully the devotees will like my bhajan. Hopefully they will feel I sing nicely. I sing with devotion. But that was actually my thought. And then I understood, actually I'm performing devotional service, but I want that the benefit of my practice come to me. I'm not thinking of giving the benefit of this practice to Krishna, but I'm actually trying to steal what is meant for Krishna, for my own benefit. And we see very, very often we have this tendency also with positions. We see many, many devotees in our ISKCON movement who are striving for position. They do all the practice so that they can be someone important, so that they can be someone who will be respected by others. And this is mixed bhakti. This is what we should learn to actually throw away. In our ISKCON institution, there is a lot of space for this mixed feeling, for this mixed bhakti with desire for position. And this is what the ego is asking. The ego is just starving for this position, for being recognized. So it's actually natural that as long as we are under the influence of false ego, we have this drive, we have this push inside of us that is trying to get in the center, even by the process of devotional service. I found a quote from Srila Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita. Very interesting quote. Prabhupada said, "To be a good man or a non-violent man is a personal attachment. I want to be a good man, or I want to be a non-violent person." That's personal attachment. Why? "But to act on the behalf of the Supreme is to act without the attachment for the result. That is the perfect action to the highest degree, recommended by the Supreme Personality of Godhead." I was, last year during Kartik, I was praying to the deities, and I noticed that what I was praying to them was, let me become a good devotee. Let me become a good devotee, eventually a great devotee, eventually. But then I understood that should not be the prayer. The prayer should be, let me become pleasing to you. Let me become able to serve you with love and devotion, but not to become anyone great or anyone advanced. I want to become an advanced devotee. Very often this is a drive in our consciousness. We want to become advanced because in the background of being advanced means I will be respected, means I will have some position, I will have some power that are given to me by the process of devotional service. So it's actually a very fine line that we need to be careful in the practice of our devotional service, that it doesn't, our devotion do not become colored or mixed with those other motives in our minds. Yeah, that's basically all I wanted to say. It's a little bit heavy topic, but at the same time, so necessary. So necessary. In one sense, we can see from one perspective of saying, yeah, this pure bhakti comes in the level of Brahma Buddha stage. I'm not there. I'm not able to do such a things. So let me wait. I am there on the Brahma Buddha stage, and then I will have pure motives and have this pure bhakti. But I come again to this point from Jiva Dharma. This Shuddha Bhakti is our sadhana. That means our practice. When we practice Krishna consciousness, we should give our all best to come closer and closer to just throw out all those other desires and come to these pure motives. I just want to please you in whatever we do. This morning we were singing here kirtan, and I was thinking, okay, I'm singing, I'm hearing, this is process of devotional service. I try to offer myself to the Lord by dancing. This is like Atmanivedanam. I just offer my soul to Krishna and just try to dance for his pleasure. Now focus, this is just for your pleasure. This hearing, this chanting, it is just for your pleasure. Don't allow any other stuff to come in between. I would like to end by telling this story, because the point is actually very much about understanding Krishna. The verse was saying, Uddhava was telling to Vidura, I wanted Krishna to reveal his most secret transcendental position, and he revealed it to me, but not to so many. He did not reveal to Brahma or to other devotees, but he revealed that only to those who have pure bhakti. And once there were the cowherd boys and Krishna were in the forest of Vrindavan, and on that morning they were actually quite early out in the forest, and the boys became hungry. And they approached Krishna and said, Krishna, you have saved us from so many demons, from the forest fire. Today you should save us from hunger. We are very hungry. Please do something for our hunger. So Krishna said to the boys, there is a house close by, and there are Brahmanas living in that house. You just go to them and you just beg them for some offerings, for some food, and then you come back to me. But don't tell them that we, Krishna and Balaram, had sent you. Just don't mention that. So the boys came, and when they arrived at the house, the Brahmanas were outside in the courtyard. They were doing Vedic sacrifice. They were doing yagyas. So what the first things the boys did, they just fell on the ground like sticks and offered obeisances to the Brahmanas. And then they loved Krishna so much that they just could not mention them. They say, we come on the behalf of Krishna and Balaram. They have asked us to come to you to beg for some food. We are very hungry. Please give us some food. But the Brahmana said, we have much more important to do. Now, we are doing our yagyas. Don't disturb. And like sometimes you are on Gayatri and someone comes. I'm Gayatri now. I mean, it's okay, we should do it like this. But in that occasion, that was the Krishna's desire that was knocking at their door. And they were saying, no, we have something more important to do. And the boys told the Brahmana, the person you worship now, he is there. He is just there in a human, in a present, in a living form, and he wants to be fed. He wants to eat. Please give him something. Please, he is the same person you are calling in your yagya is just there. Please give. But the Brahmana just could not understand. They were too mixed in their devotion, so that they just could not understand that. Yeah, fully into the rituals. So the boy. Yeah, but at that time the fire was burning and they did not want to give any to Krishna. So the boys came back to Krishna and they were very sad. They said they did not give us anything. And Krishna said something very nice. He said, anyone who is begging should not be disturbed if he don't get what he is begging for. This is natural. So, but you please, you go back to the same house. But this time you go and ask the wives of the Brahmanas. So the boys went back, they entered from the back door of the house, and there were the wives of the Brahmana, and they had cooked the whole morning, and they had a lot of food, a lot of offerings that were actually meant for the yagya. So the boys told the ladies, they say, we are so hungry, and Krishna, he's also very hungry, and he's just nearby, please give us some food. And when the ladies, the wives of the Brahmana, heard that, they became overwhelmed by a sweet anxiety. Sweet anxiety. What? Krishna is hungry. We should immediately go and feed him. So they all took the pots with all the food and whatever was there, put that on their heads, and they just came out of the house and went to the forest with the boys. And the Brahmana were doing the yagya, and suddenly they saw something is going on in the corner of the eyes. So they just looked, and they saw the wives going out with all the food stuff, and they called them, hey, where do you go? And they saw the boys were there also, so they could guess what was going on. But they were just too much absorbed, too much into their rituals. They just could not stop their rituals. And the boys brought the mothers on the side of the Yamuna, and they entered deeper and deeper into the Vrindavan forest. And that sometimes there was a clearing in the middle of the forest, and there were a lot of cows, a lot of white cows. And in the middle of those cows were Krishna and Balaram. So the ladies, when they saw Krishna and Balaram, they came closer. They were so beautiful. And they were, the ladies were very shy. They could not just go and embrace them like this. They did not, that was first time they will meet Krishna and Balaram like this. So inside of their heart, they embraced them to their fullest content. And then all the boys sat down and all the ladies served them the feast. And at the end, Krishna told them, now you please go back to your house. Actually, that's the same verse that Krishna told to the gopi at the beginning of the Rasa dance. Now you go back to your homes. And the wives of the Brahmana say, no ways. No ways, Krishna. We have abandoned everything. We have disobeyed our husbands. Now they will not accept us back. We surrender fully unto you. Now you have to take full care of us and keep us with you. But Krishna said, no, if you want to please me, you please follow my instruction and go back to your homes. Your husbands need your support for all their activities, and I will personally arrange that they will accept you back. No, don't worry. So the wives went back, and when they went back, Krishna fulfilled his promise. The Brahmanas understood how foolish we are. To hell our yagyas, they were saying. To hell our ritualistic ceremony. You are much more advanced than us. You could understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the beneficiary of all the yajñas was there in living force. You could believe what the boys told you, but we could not. So here we see, because those ladies, the wives of the Brahmana, had this pure love for Krishna, this pure bhakti, they could immediately understand what was going on, and they could immediately follow and link their consciousness to Krishna's desire. That was this beautiful purport we read from Srila Prabhupada, that the devotee who has this pure bhakti, he's not a separatist. He merged into Krishna, but not into the form of Krishna. He merged his desire, merged into the desire of Krishna. It become one. The desire of the devotee and the desire of the Lord become one. That's the level of Shuddha Bhakti. And immediately the wives understood Krishna has this desire, and immediately their desire connected to that. There was not a tinge of a doubt. Should we do it or should we not do it? What if our husband will do this or will do that? It was just Krishna wants that. Immediately they just did it. And do you know how those ladies, they had acquired this pure bhakti? How did they progress to that level? Yeah. There was actually, the house was on the way to Mathura, and very often the gopis will go and sell yogurt in Mathura, and then they will stop to the house, and like ladies like to do, they sat and they were speaking with each other, and the gopis were just all the time telling about the stories and the pastimes of Krishna. And because of hearing so much, they just had this bhakti had flourished in their heart, and it had become pure. So that's... So I think the point is we should become introspective in our life and catch up a little bit what our desires are, and especially this desire for fame, this desire for respect. It's very deeply rooted in our hearts, and that we really try to throw that out as we are performing our devotional service. The Shuddha Bhakti is our sadhana. That means as we practice, we should be very diligent where our mind is going and what our motives are, so that we can actually come closer and closer to this pure bhakti, to this real bhakti. Okay, so that comments, questions? Oh, actually, don't turn the camera. It's okay. Yeah, we keep it like this. Yeah, nobody sees you.
Good example.
example of sometimes understanding of parts and things. So I think this is very
difficult.
Difficult to judge other parts.
Yeah, thank you. Once my Shiksha Guru told me, even Krishna do not judge anyone. So who are we to judge anyone? And that's true. We often judge from the external level of how one behaves, which often give indication of what is in the heart. But we should never make any judgment, because we cannot know really what is inside of the heart, where the consciousness is. At the same time, when one becomes more advanced in devotional life, one can feel very much what is the consciousness of others. Like Madhava was telling me, when others lead kirtan, we can immediately feel if they think of Krishna when they sing, or if their mind is somewhere else. He was saying, immediately I can feel it, if they are thinking of Krishna when they sing or not. And I guess devotees who are pure, who are more pure or purer, like gurus, I mean, we cannot say gurus, but some they are more pure, they can immediately feel what is in the consciousness of the devotees. That often they just can see and just tell us, please improve here, please improve there. But in general, for us or for me, it's we should never actually put any judgment on anyone, because they might even sometimes have some bad habits that push them to act in ways that seems to be totally non-devotee like, but they, in their hearts, they have love, some type of love for Krishna, and when they do their service to Krishna, maybe when they chant their rounds alone, they are crying for Krishna, maybe when they cook for Krishna, they are alone in the kitchen, nobody sees them, and they are just thinking of Krishna. So it's always safe to not make any judgment over the devotees, and to always see them as much more advanced than us, and much more, and always keep this respect. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Maybe we should give also the voice to Mani Manjari, who most probably has also some nice and relevant comments. Or
and it lasted for 4 months. And then after 4 months, one morning he opened his eyes and
again, like so-called normal. But they said that he was in this state. Then he sometimes was a little bit conscious about outside world. And then, in this moment, they said, you're so humble. You always ask for basis and obeisances and praising God. And he was like, this was extreme humbleness. It was the actual symptom of his love, of his exotic position, of his friend. Because that he loved really, this was the symptom how that he was acting. That he really recognized everyone is part of Krishna, offering obeisances to everyone. And ask, please, approach the iPhone, you go to the eye. No. This was the symptom of the highest ecstasy, of highest prana. That he really see Krishna everywhere and in everyone present, and that everyone is better than the human being. So this makes me somehow think about how this judgmental, this thinking of others is not for me. Always think someone takes some wrong for me. This is actually not the type of life we should be avoided. And if we notice this judgmental mentality, somehow should be our sadhana to avoid this, because when we have prema, then it's natural. But that's not how it's what it is It should be our sadhana to act like those exalted devotees. We should just follow their footsteps. We are not on this level. But when we come to that level, then it will be natural. And until we are not on that level, we should follow that footsteps and act like this unnaturally. It means it should be sadhana. Sadhana means practice because we are not still on that level. So we should really try not to judge anyone, to respect everyone, to love everyone, to accept as he is, and see that everyone is actually acting according to Krishna's desire. Everyone is actually acting because my hand was always so, you know, everyone follows my way in every sense. So why should we, if everyone follows Krishna's way, why should we judge him? And then how to try really to become, this is actually my question. How to recognize what is actually Krishna's desire by acquiring knowledge and reading and trying to adjust, you know. But sometimes it's not so easy to know at some moments and what is really Krishna's pleasure in some moments. What do we really like to do? It's what he expects from us to do in some particular moment. And then I think we should really, I don't know how you are doing it, or you are recommending what is Krishna's desire. Sometimes I have a question. And then the answers come from the book and so the book, and somewhere the answers come. But I think when you are really on a right consciousness, you are really connected, then you don't even have to ask, you will automatically do what is in desire. But this is really, I don't know how you find out or you can say what Krishna wants from you in some particular moment.
I personally, I was thinking of this morning, and I guess everyone can get different answers. Obviously, as more one becomes pure, as more one's consciousness becomes dovetailed with the one's desire become, or Krishna's desire become dovetailed with the desire of the devotees, and then it's just like automatic. But in our level, I mean, sometimes it happened to me, I don't know if it's a mental things, but I'm cooking, and suddenly I have the smell of one specific spice coming. And it's maybe because the spice are just close to me, but I always feel like, okay, this spice came to me, so I will use this spice for this or that preparation. But it's difficult on our level to know really what Krishna wants us to do. But what I know is that Krishna wants us to become pure. And that Krishna wants us to give Krishna consciousness to others, to be giving, to be spreading Krishna consciousness. This is for me where I know this is for sure his desire. And this is for sure something that if I meditate on how to do that, my consciousness will be linked with his, because this is also his desire. So I, for myself, I step where I'm sure that this is Krishna's desire, and then the other things will come due to with the time, with purity by purity. So for me, I just focus more on what I'm sure now Krishna wants, and try to serve in that. But obviously we could say, okay, preaching, should I preach like this or like that? How Krishna wants me to preach? Like you say, it's very good to but yeah, it's very, very nice to also, that's also a way to remember Krishna by just asking. I mean, it's not that we need to all the time. Yeah, we can ask in our heart, and We heard about Sudam. Sudam was a garland maker in Mathura, and Sudam, Krishna came to his shop because Krishna wanted to have a garland. He was missing. He always had a garland in Vrindavan, and suddenly he was in Mathura, he had no garland. So he went to Sudama's house, and Sudam was welcoming him and giving foot washing, and the whole family was there, and it was really giving the example of the ideal Grihastha. We heard last Thursday in the Lila Katha about Sudam. And then, at the end, Sudam was thinking, how can I please the Lord? What can I do now to please him? I did all I thought. And because he had this desire, how can I please the Lord? Krishna in the heart spoke. And Krishna told him, you are a garland maker. You gave already garland to Krishna when he came, but there were garland that were already made. But you are so expert in making garland. Make the best garland you can for Krishna. So actually, he had the desire, how can I please the Lord? How can I serve? And then, just because the desire was there, Krishna in the heart just spoke to him what he would like him to do. And then, so I think when we ask Krishna, and when we turn our consciousness, how can I please him? What do we want? I don't want to be a separatist. I want to be in unity with Krishna's desire, and we pray in that sense. Then we immediately Krishna reveals in the heart how we can serve him, how we can please him. But if we never ask or never think of that, then why Krishna should come and say, "I want this from you. I want this from you." No, this is not Krishna's mood. Yeah.
You know, somehow please always make it. I mean, I have experience whenever I pray for something Krishna, it is in some particular way, and then sometimes it even disturbs, and then this is what I was praying for, so I'm welcoming to them. But for in my previous consciousness, it will be disturbed. How can you feel? But then I was praying actually, and then I accept it. And it changes your attitude. Connections will be there.
Yeah, we need to be careful our desire. We are doing devotional service, and we should not remain our whole life doing devotional service, mixed devotional service, doing our devotional service but having so many separatist. I don't know if it's English, but to have so many separate desire on our own. As we progress, we need to become more and more careful of what we are praying for, and come more and more in line to pray for pure bhakti, to pray really to be able to give pleasure to Krishna, and somehow give up this this desire for mukti and bhakti and I think we stop here, it's all past 9. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.